A way to build a roadmap can be, okay, I'll just copy what the leader in the market is doing and try to make it better or faster. We don't want to do that. We wanted to influence the roadmap by taking inspiration from what others have been building, but then create a superior solution. And how do you do that? How do you innovate and make sure that your roadmap has a bit of feature parity so that people can compare, easily compare? You want them to have an easy time. And at the same time, create your own story and your own value. The way we have been dealing with this is very actively asking the community, our community. I am Pablo Ruiz Muzquiz, and I'm CEO and co-founder of Penpot.
This is Code Story, a podcast bringing you interviews with tech visionaries.
It's 6 months moonlighting.
There's nothing on the back end.
Who share what it takes to change an industry.
I don't exactly know what to do next.
It took many goes to get right.
Who built the teams that have their back.
A company is its people.
The teams help each other achieve.
Most proud of our team.
Keeping scalability top of mind.
All that infrastructure was a
pain. Yes, we've been fighting it as we grow.
Total waste of time. The stories you don't read in the headlines.
It's not an easy thing to achieve, mind
you. Took it off the shelf and dusted it off and tried it again.
To ride the ups and downs of the startup life.
You need to really want it.
It's not just about technology.
All this and more on Code Story. I'm your host, Noah Laphart. And today, how Pablo Ruiz Muzquiz is bridging the gap between designers and developers. Open source with design expressed in code. This episode is sponsored by Speakeasy. Grow your API user adoption and improve engineering velocity with friction-free integration experiences. With Speakeasy's platform, you can now automatically generate SDKs in 10 languages and Terraform providers in minutes. Visit speakeasy.com/codestory and generate your first SDK for free. This message is sponsored by QA Wolf. QA Wolf gets engineering teams to 80% automated end-to-end test coverage and helps them ship 5 times faster by reducing QA cycles from hours to minutes. With over 100 five-star reviews on G2 and customer testimonials from SalesLoft, Drata, and AutoTrader, you're in good hands. Join the Wolfpack at qawolf.com. Pablo Ruiz Muzquiz has a background in physics and computer science. At some point, he decided to ditch the science and pursue open source, which is what got him started in his 20-year passion for tech. But outside of tech, he longs to feel like a useful member of society and engages in extracurricular projects to support this. He also is into traditional archery, i.e. a wood bow and wood arrows, and finds joy in connecting with the old way of doing things. He also enjoys gardening and reading, of which fantasy is one of his favorite genres. Pablo built a company called Kaleidos, which aids in the creation of software solutions. They hold a core belief that there should be a close connection between designers and developers. What they found in the tooling to support these disciplines is that they weren't built to embrace this concept. So, they decided to incubate a product and make it open source. This is the creation story of Penpot.
I think this is one of those stories where you see people building the tool they need, because Penpot is a collaboration suite to design and prototype user interfaces, and it's web-based and it's real-time and all that, but it's meant for both designers and developers. So if you are into software development and somehow you need to prototype, mock up, or even define with precision the user interface of your software, you end up using some tool to draw and make decisions. And there's a lot of research going on and workflows and complex decision-making process around that. These tools typically only target designers. And Penpot tried very early to say, look, this is not just for designers. This has to target developers too. We were creating in our company a culture of collaboration between designers and developers. And we were not enjoying the tooling that was available to us. So we would build technology for their startups and big organizations before we came what we are now, a services company. there was this friction across those workflows and handoff moments between design and code. And we ended up saying, let's build a superior tool for design and prototyping that really brings both designers and developers together in just one workflow. And that was easier said than done, because these tools tend to be extremely complex. We said, okay, let's build our internal tool. Let's just build it for ourselves. And that was 2018. And we started incubating that idea. And at some point, it was so successful for ourselves that we decided, hey, but this could actually be something for everyone. And since we were an open source company, we wanted this project to be open source. And that's why Pemper is open source, because we had that open source ethos at the company level. The company was not called Pempot. Pempot is the name of the product. The company is called Kaleidos, as in kaleidoscope, which means of a beautiful shape in Greek. And so Kaleidos team created Pempot, the product, to serve our own needs of bridging that gap between designers and developers. We bring a multidisciplinary approach to this kind of workflows.
Let's dive into the MVP then, so that first version of Pempot. How long did it take to build, and what sort of tools were used to bring it to life?
We announced that we were building an MVP in 2020, that was February 2020, at FOSDEM, that's a free and open source developer meeting in Brussels. We announced that we were building this concept, and it took us a year. Basically, the next year, we demoed that. It was online, that FOSDEM was online, because it was still post-COVID. We were using PostgreSQL for the database. We used a relational database. But then the programming language was chosen was Clojure. That runs on the JVM and can very nicely go from the backend to the frontend runtime. So for a web-based tool, you can offload certain parts of the runtime from the backend to the frontend and vice versa. So it's very fluid. And the fact that we are dealing with mathematical objects and transformation, after all, this is a kind of vector-based productivity suite. And there's a lot of mathematical operations that are transforming the objects, whether it's applying a blur or is there some blending, blend out, whatever. There's a lot of functions that are being applied live. So it made a total sense that we would use a functional programming language to make this development, being it very complex, at least sustainable. Yeah, in a year, we were able to deliver the beta version, and that was what we presented, and it got a lot of traction. And then what happened shortly after that was that there was this big announcement by Adobe that they were acquiring Figma. We were expecting an end of a cycle. That's also the reason why we started as early as we could, because we were predicting that design tools should evolve, and if nobody's thinking about that, then we should. Without any new release, we saw that we were the only tool that was benefiting really from the outpour of angst, because that really was a terrible situation for the design community. It was an eye-opening moment for a lot of people. We saw that we got this traction, and then since then, it's never about releases, it's just about building the community. It has changed the way we have approached building the product from a feature-driven perspective to a community-driven perspective. But yeah, it only took us a year. The reason that happened is that we decided to go all in with the browser stack and offload out all of the work and complexity and say, whatever the browser tells us that we could do with their API, we will follow that.
This episode is sponsored by Speakeasy. Whether you're growing the user adoption of your public API or streamlining internal development, SDKs can turn the chore of API integration into effortless implementation. Unburden your API users from guessing their way around your API while keeping your team focused on your product. Shorten the time to live integration and provide a delightful experience for your customers. With Speakeasy's platform, you can now automatically generate up-to-date, robust, idiomatic SDKs in 10 languages and Terraform providers in just a matter of minutes. SDKs are feature-rich with type safety, auto-retries, and pagination. Everything you need to give your API the developer experience it deserves. Deliver a premium API experience without the premium price tag. Visit speakeasy.com/codestory to get started and generate your first SDK for free. This message is sponsored by SnapTrade. Link in user brokerage accounts and build world-class investing experiences with SnapTrade's unified brokerage API. With over $12 billion in connected assets and over 300,000 connected accounts, SnapTrade's API quality and developer experience are second to none. SnapTrade is SOC 2 certified and uses industry-leading security practices. Developers can use the company's official client SDKs to build investing experiences in minutes without the limitations of traditional aggregators. Get started for free today by visiting snaptrade.com/codestory. You've got the MVP. It's working. You're getting that early traction that you want to proceed and push forward. How have you done that? How have you progressed the product and matured it? And I think it'd be interesting to hear sort of how you build your roadmap for Pinpoint and how you decide what's the next most important thing to build or to address with the product.
This market is not very fragmented, the design and prototyping market. A way to build a roadmap can be, okay, I'll just copy what the leader in the market is doing and try to make it better or faster. We don't want to do that. We wanted to influence the roadmap by taking inspiration from what others have been building, but then create a superior solution. And how do you do that? How do you innovate and make sure that your roadmap has a bit of feature parity so that people can compare, easily compare? You want them to have an easy time. And at the same time, create your own story and your own value. The way we have been dealing with this is very actively asking the community, our community, in certain moments, not every single day for every single decision, how would they feel about this next major milestone in terms of the benefits or the features. And by carefully selecting those moments where we go out and we ask the community to give us feedback on some ideas that are not the typical ideas they are facing every day, like the comfort zone is not there, it's just new concepts, we have been asked to be bolder. It has been wonderful to see that we were like, okay, reluctant to ask. They're going to tell us, just do it like the competition. Don't bother asking me questions. And yet the answer was, I like that idea very much. What if you are bolder in the implementation? Like, for instance, we were discussing how to get native with CSS declarative syntax in declarative design, which is completely new to design and prototyping typically. The community said, just implement Flexbox CSS. Just don't try to translate that into something that a designer could enjoy. Just go all in with CSS and Flexbox and then Gridbox and things like that. So it is a mixture of feature parity, our own vision and ideas from the collaborative perspective between designers and developers, and then the community's role. And we've shared all this very often so that people understand how we are building the roadmap. And by the way, the roadmap is public. It's not a dead document that we update once in a while. The roadmap is actually where we're working. You can go to our roadmap and you can see exactly who is working on what and what's next to come, which in a way is a constant spoiler for people. People know what we are building, but it's fine. It's better because we are avoiding questions from the community of whether we are building this or not in the future, because they can already look into the roadmap and see that, effectively that is going to happen in the next few months.
I know probably one direction this is going to go, but I'm curious if there's a parallel direction. I'm curious about how you built your team, right? You have Kaleidos and an amazing team there. You're building an open source product as well. So I'm curious if there's contributors, right? So tell me about how you went about that and what type of things do you look for in those people to indicate that they're the winning horses to join you?
This is a very complex product to build. No wonder there are only a few out there. It takes years to really build something meaningful. You need people that understand that sometimes you have to be patient about what you're building. Don't take shortcuts all the time. Treasure that collaboration ethos between different disciplines. It is critical for any engineer joining the company to really value or be in a position to immediately value good design, good user experience, and good UI. Not to think that they are just that last mile and then we prettify things. On the contrary, they have agency and ownership over the process, and it's an alliance. It's not a feudal system at all. when you start adding all those kind of requisites, you don't have that much people really that are up to a task. Then we have specific technology requirements, although we are opening up a bit that recently. I was just mentioning Clojure. So we are okay if you don't master Clojure or functional programming. But I think it is more around the culture of building something with different perspectives that is going to benefit all of those perspectives. Of course, you have to be very good at building software, have experience in building very complex software, and then acknowledging the community that comes with an open source project. There is a lot of benefits from building an open source project, but there's also, because you have a community that will root for you and act as the salespeople and do the bottom-up strategy in terms of adoption in companies, if that is your target. I know I'm saying everyone has to go that route. But also, the community is an extended part of the team. And we are trying to find a balance between the core team, what we call Penpot friends, that are very close, intimate members of that community that we interface with almost every day. Then some partnership, strategic partnerships with companies and organizations. And then the broader community that is there to give us feedback, use it, create content, tutorials, build plugins, etc., etc. We don't want to build everything ourselves. I think in terms of how we build a team, we don't want to have 99% of whoever's building Penpot as part of the core team. We want to have a different ratio. I'm not sure which ratio that is, but recently we came up with this 4-to-1. Like, we want to have 4 human beings out there which are not part of the core team contributing actively for each core team member. That also shapes what we build and how we build it and how fast we can be in building certain features.
This message is sponsored by QA Wolf. If slow QA processes bottleneck your software engineering team and you're releasing slower because of it, you need a solution. You need QA Wolf. QA Wolf gets engineering teams to 80% automated end-to-end test coverage and helps them ship 5 times faster by reducing QA cycles from hours to minutes. With over 100 5-star reviews on G2 and customer testimonials from SalesLoft, Drata, AutoTrader, and many more, you're in good hands. Ready to ship faster with fewer bugs? Join the Wolfpack at QAWolf.com to see if they can help you squash the QA bottleneck. This message is sponsored by SnapTrade. Link in user brokerage accounts and build world-class investing experiences with SnapTrade's unified brokerage API. With over $12 billion in connected assets and over 300,000 connected accounts, SnapTrade's API quality and developer experience are second to none. SnapTrade is SOC 2 certified and uses industry-leading security practices. Developers can use the company's official client SDKs to build investing experiences in minutes without the limitations of traditional aggregators. Get started for free today by visiting snaptrade.com/codestory. So let's move forward then. I'm curious about scalability, right? Did you build this to scale from day one in that first version, or maybe with scale in mind? Or have you been fighting this in any sort of, you know, capacity as you've grown?
We were fans of this idea of sustainable development from day one when we created the company in 2011. That was part of our sales pitch to other startups. We would say to them, look, we're going to be with you for that first year, and we want to build things that can scale up when we are not there for you, because this is just temporary partnership. That day one of the project was, let's discuss when we exit. It was weird for them, but for us, it was natural to have that uncomfortable conversation. We have that deep into our culture, and we always want to make sure that we build things that are sustainable and can scale up. But sometimes you just make mistakes, and you think that certain technological decisions are going to go very well. Like, for instance, we decided that browsers under DOM and the way they would render SVG would allow us to continue to grow in terms of performance with massive design projects. And the reality is sad. The reality is that browsers are not up to the task, and they don't plan to be. We just realized that, and we announced a tech pivot. That is something that sometimes you don't see because the size of your use case or the size of the projects people are building with your tool on the early days do not represent what is going to happen in a year time. Being able to predict that and make decisions today is very challenging because you want to build things that add value that day, not necessarily things that are going to prevent some potential pitfall from happening in 2 years' time. I think we've been struggling with identifying where to invest because there's going to be return of investment, inevitably some return of investment at some point, and when not to be early optimizing today. For a project like this that is real-time collaboration and you want really bigger teams building bigger projects, I think there's some lessons learned on how to invest early on.
As you step out on the balcony and you look across all that you've built, with Pinpot, but maybe with Kaleidos as well, what are you most proud of?
I think we are very proud of this very mature, senior, and passionate community that we are nurturing, that is truly welcoming. I was not expecting this so soon. You think, okay, I'm going to have users and active members of the community that are going to discuss how to use the tool, but how thoughtful this community is and how accessible it is, I was not expecting that. And I want to take a bit of credit from it because we came from this idea of, look, we have a hybrid community. We must ensure that this is a very, multidisciplinary, welcoming community so nobody feels alienated here. And I think through that obsession, we were able to set up clear goals and values for the community. Of course, I'm very proud of the product, but as an open source company, the type of community that we have is what we are really proud of. This is key because this is our moat. For an open source project to have an active community, beyond just having an open source license attached to the Git repo, really having an active community that is growing and keeps building, whether it's awareness or actual features for the product, I can say that we are really proud of the quality and the polishedness of the user interface. For our people, Pinpot's UI is the best UI for any design prototyping tool, and that it's also quite amazing to have some people anonymously saying, because they cannot say this publicly, like, you have the best user experience for any design tool that has existed. And so I think that is also wonderful. But yeah, community and the user interface, something very open source and something not typically found in open source projects. Amazing UI. So I'll take that.
Okay, let's flip the script a little bit. Tell me about a mistake you made and how you and your team responded to it.
There's one, we set up aspirational KPIs too early. What I mean by that is that 2 years ago we said, look, we will know that we are successfully building a business around an open source product when we are able to measure the trend in how big teams are creating multiple projects, right? And we had definitions about what a big team would be and how can we identify that, whether it was for our SaaS offer or the self-host option. That was a mistake because we start being tactical and identifying the definitions and the KPIs that matter at that point. And we try to bring the future to the present and measure our present against that future KPI. I think it was at least a year that we were saying, this is not working, this is an issue. We are not seeing that KPI go up until we realized, but this is not the KPI for now. We need to look at other things that we can act upon today and see a shift next month. That was a massive failure back in 2022. Now that is fixed and we have a better approach to that, but that caused a lot of waste and bad decision making for sure.
Tell me about what the future looks like for Pinpot, the product, and for your team. And I hear and I read that you've recently released a new piece of the product and a plugin. So tell me about that as well.
That is going to be huge. The plugin system already is looking great. I was recently at some conference and I said, I believe that Pinpot is going to be one of the most important open source projects of the decade. I didn't want to say the most important project of the decade because I was where I was, okay? I was being respectful of the audience. But I truly believe that this idea of developing designs, building designs and building code separately and enjoying some collaboration practices, the next level is really to bring designers collaborating with each other and developers collaborating with each other, and then everyone collaborates with each other. That is the future we envision for software building as a whole, as an industry and as a practice. But at the same time, future for us means 2025. Like, we have to be very conscious of, yeah, but what's next? And 2025 means finally getting a core product, Penpod, with plugins, which are now released, with three or four additions that were never found in other design prototyping tools, like we just mentioned, design tokens, for instance. A very nice take on AI, different from what other marketplaces are doing. And the file-based API, the format, the Penpod format, interfacing with Git repositories, making sure that when we say design is code and code is design, is actually that is what is going on, that you can interface with the Penpod artifacts using your tool of choice. We've made our estimations. We have our roadmap and we have several major milestones, and all of them fall within 2025. We are very excited that we are so close to shifting the paradigm in how the software build industry has been evolving for the past, let's say, 20 years. So again, long-term vision, one of the most important projects in history of software development. But then very tactically, 2025, getting the best of engineering into the design process in the design workflow. And by doing so, getting 10 times more users to design and prototyping tools. That is a ratio these days. Like, statistically, you have one designer per 10 developers. So that is a much bigger addressable market if you are able to combine both. And we see that happening 2025 for us.
Well, you know, we talked about a mistake earlier, but this is a little different spin. If you could go back to the beginning, what would you do different? Or where would you consider taking a different approach? Doesn't have to be a mistake. Could have been something that worked and maybe even worked well, but maybe you'd tweak it a little bit.
Perhaps I would have wanted to see that to be faster through that path. Who doesn't, right? What I've learned is that, unfortunately, I feel that sometimes we have dependencies on external crisis to happen for you to take notice and act upon. Let me explain this. So Khalil was born in 2011, and there was still financial crisis in Spain. I don't know. It was a reaction to a crisis, a financial crisis. And we knew how privileged we were, software engineers, we could do whatever. And Penpod, the triggering point was the COVID, the corona, lockdown and everything. That also triggered a massive reaction. Okay, what's the next big thing for us? What I would like is to be able to identify those opportunities, those life-changing projects without the life-threatening situation happening. Just proactively looking for those and not needing that massive input that sometimes you cannot even cope with. So I'm happy with the path, but if I think about how much I was, or we were as a team, mastering that and taking ownership, I'm not sure we can take credit of everything, because sometimes it was just a tactical reaction to something that happened to everyone.
Last question, Pablo. So you're getting on a plane and you're sitting next to a young entrepreneur who's built the next big thing. They're jazzed about it. They can't wait to show it off to the world, and can't wait to show it off to you right there on the plane. What advice do you give that person, having gone down this road a bit?
For the sake of the thought experiment, let's say it's an open source project. So if this engineer or whoever is excited about this open source project is going to transform whatever world, and they really want to be successful about it, I'd say, look, make sure you have three ingredients to your project. Otherwise, the expectation management could be problematic. First, the adoption of your project needs the potential to be massive and global. Since open source is very generous by default, you need that generosity to pay off with a lot of people using it. Because then when you are capturing value, it's going to be a tiny fraction. So you need a massive value creation process taking place. Not every open source project has the potential to be massively adopted. And massively might mean different things depending on the market. So I would say, is this something that you could see with a wide adoption at scale. The second question, or the second piece of advice, would be make sure that you own the conversation with your core users all the time. Make sure that whatever you're building won't get behind layers of other businesses' interests, right? That you have a direct link between your product and whoever is you consider to be a core user. A core user could be a developer or could be another stakeholder. If you don't have that conversation and other people are building those conversation channels, that's an issue. You need to make sure that you are the obvious point of contact. And again, not every open source business can easily create that communication channel because of the type of tool you are building, perhaps. And finally, I would, of course, encourage to keep being passionate about this great idea that's going to transform the world. But also, I would say you can be patient. You have to be patient and trust the power of having an active community alongside you. This is not about you alone. To have an active community, you have to start early and to nurture that community and shape it in a way that you feel comfortable dealing with the conflict of interests and the expectations and all that. That is, as we were discussing earlier, right? That is your ultimate tailwind. That is your moat. And sometimes when you're excited, you have this focus in tunnel vision effect where you think that it's all about you and how fast you have to build something. And you have community building as an afterthought. I would discuss when is the right time to actively build that community.
I think that's fantastic advice. Well, Pablo, thank you for being on the show today. And thank you for telling the creation story of Pinpot.
Thank you.
And this concludes another chapter of Code Story.
Code Story is hosted and produced by Noah Labhart. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or the podcasting app of your choice. And when you get a chance, leave us a review. Both things help us out tremendously. And thanks again for listening.